Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means for February 22, 2005. We have one item on the agenda today, House Bill 5047, which is the budget for the State Library. With that, I will open the hearing also for HB 5047. And Mr. Shepke, do you want to start off as the State Librarian?
Senator Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Jim Shepke. I'm the State Librarian. I'm pleased today to have the chair of the State Library Board with me, Bill Sullivan of Eugene, and he's going to open our testimony today.
That would be fine.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Sullivan, and I've been a citizen activist for libraries in Lane County for some time, but I'm better known, I suppose, as an Oregon author. I write these 100 Hikes books. If any of you have ever done any hiking, you've probably been there with one of my books. We have a seven-member volunteer board that includes Richard Turner from Lake Oswego, Jim Hayden from Redmond, Doug Henrich from Milton Freewater, Charlotte Herbert from Myrtle Creek, Frieda Vars from Corvallis, and Yvonne Williams from Portland. And we're appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. And our board is both a policy-making board and a governing board, which is to say, as governing board, we evaluate and hire the state librarian. And as policy-making board, we set the general policy and rules for the operation of the library. We have gone through an extensive process over the past couple of years to refine the mission of the state library and to develop the goals and performance measures, and I think you'll see the results of some of that in the packet that you have in front of you. We'll be talking our state librarian more about the performance measures and how we're doing. We've also been asked to prioritize the services of the state library and talk about how we do 10% cuts. And I thought I'd just sort of briefly introduce that topic since it was a painful one. I should first say that the state library's mission has changed quite a bit in the last 15 years. And this has cut the budget drastically, like the number of managers, administrative positions has gone from 11 to 6. And this has all been a streamlining process to eliminate any services that are redundant. 15 years ago, a lot of the services that the state library did, you could also get at the Salem Public Library. This is no longer true. And now we've really streamlined it to three main services that we don't think you can get anywhere else. One of them is library development. And this is coordinating and helping all of those little libraries all over the state that otherwise don't have any central help. And that involves actually funneling two kinds of grants to them. One are federal grants. These are Library Service Technology Act, LSTA grants. And again, these are pass-through grants that we get from the federal government. If it looks like our budget has gone up at all this past year, it's not because of state funds, it's because of these federal pass-through grants that we administer and pass out to all those libraries. The other one are the ready-to-read grants, and those are funded by general fund dollars. And those are, though, supplying literacy reading programs to children throughout the state and homeschoolers. It's a safety net for the schools, but also for the thousands and thousands of homeschoolers in Oregon who rely on public libraries for their reading programs and books. And this ready-to-read grants help that. Our second goal is the talking books in Braille. And here we're serving the blind Oregonians. And again, this is a program that's most of this materials, all the materials, come from the federal government for free. They provide the cassette tapes with the books on them and millions of dollars worth of cassette tape players and free postage with the stipulation that the state of Oregon administers it. And so the part of our budget that comes from the general fund there is just to administer that program for the blind. And our third part is government information services, and this is just serving as librarians, answering the questions of legislators and all state employees. If you want to know, for example, how many motorcyclists have been killed because they didn't wear a helmet, and you want to get real information, well, who are you going to call? You call a librarian, and that is the sort of service that the state library provides. Now, about those priorities and the 10% cuts.
You want to do that at the end when we get to this part?
I don't know.
That might be better. We'll be looking at the slide.
Yeah? Okay. I'll be back to talk about that. Okay.
Thank you, Ben.
Okay,
thank you. Mr. Chair, I will continue with our presentation. We have a PowerPoint presentation for you today. You have all the slides in front of you. And this does hit all the required elements that the Legislative Fiscal Office set for the agency overview.
Please proceed.
Thank you. The mission of the State Library, Bill Sullivan alluded to this. We basically just do three things at the State Library. We have a very focused mission. We provide information to state government. We provide reading materials to blind and print-disabled Oregonians, and we provide leadership grants and other assistance to local libraries in the state so that they can improve their service. We were asked to give you a little historical perspective, and that's something we're very aware of this year because it happens to be the centennial of the State Library. We were founded in 1905. The founding mothers of the State Library are being honored this year. Mary Frances Isom was the librarian, the library director at Multnomah County Library. She drafted House Bill 6, which created the State Library in 1905. She actually drafted the legislation. As soon as it was passed, and it passed on February 13th that year with only two dissenting votes, and as soon as it passed, she went to Wisconsin, which had a very active state library program, and she met Cornelia Marvin, and they really hit it off, and Cornelia Marvin Pierce was hired to be the state librarian, the very first Oregon state librarian. And she was both of these women were very dynamic leaders, incredibly successful. Cornelia Marvin, the job of the state library in 1905 was to establish public and school libraries in every community in Oregon. And when Cornelia Marvin got here, there was only one library in the entire state, Multnomah County Library. By the time she retired in 1928, there were 82 public libraries. Almost every community had a public library. And to top it off, she married the governor in 1928, and here's a picture of their wedding day. And he ran for Congress, by the way, and she went off to Washington to be his chief of staff. She was just an amazing woman, had an amazing career both here in Oregon and then at the national level. So the timeline, the historical perspective, our timeline sort of looks like this. We started in 1905. Our original mission was this library development mission, and that continues today. We continue to serve 1,600 public libraries, academic libraries, and school libraries in a variety of ways. Not long after we were established, we started serving the state government with information, what we call today government research and electronic service. And we continue to do that today. And then our latest mission came about in 1969 when we took over the Talking Book and Braille services to the blind from the Multnomah County Library. It had been there beginning in about the 1930s, and it made sense and really to have that at a state at the state library rather than at Multnomah County Library. So we've done that service since that time. The board has set long-range goals for the state library. They are to improve library service to state government, increase usage, and maintain user satisfaction, to improve, adapt, and market talking book and braille services to a growing population of eligible Oregonians. We serve about 7,000 Oregonians. We estimate there's about 50,000 Oregonians who could use this service because they're blind or have other disabilities that prevent them from using their local public library. Our third goal is to lead public libraries to achieve excellence in service to children. This is the real focus nowadays of our library development program, because we know the profound influence that public libraries can have on children's reading proficiency. And so we really have focused on that with our Ready to Read grant program. Another long-range goal is to take a leadership role in developing a comprehensive statewide library resource sharing network. This means the ability of Oregonians to use all the library resources in our state, to borrow books from any library, regardless of where they happen to live, to get information and answers from any library. And we do this in a variety of ways that you'll see in the presentation today. We also want to focus on improving citizen access to government information as part of that, and I'll show you how we do that. We also want to assist local communities to develop school and public library services for unserved and underserved Oregonians. And even though we've been working for 100 years to establish library service for everyone, we haven't achieved that goal. We have about 9% of Oregonians who don't have a public library. They don't live in a place that funds public library services. We also have about 8% of Oregonians whose library is substandard. It's not open many hours. It doesn't have trained staff. It doesn't do a good job with children's programs. So we're still working on that original mission to bring quality service to every Oregonian. We're asked in phase one here to give you information about our organization. This is what it looks like. It's a very unique organization. It's a team-based organization. We're one of the few agencies in state government that has a true team-based organization. The four circles that you see at the bottom of this picture are our four teams. Three of them correspond to our three-part mission, and one of them is administration. As Bill mentioned, we've had two major downsizings in the last 25 years. The last one came after Measure 5 passed. Governor Roberts directed every agency to reduce their staff by 20%. Our board actually exceeded that, and we had a 21.4% reduction in staff at that time, which was the highest of any agency with more than 20 staff. So we've had significant downsizing. And we've pretty much stayed at that level, plus or minus one or two positions since then. So what we had to do to accomplish that downsizing is go from the hierarchical organization that you see here, which is a pretty traditional state government organization with silos and a lot of managers. If you notice that, there's managers stacked on top of managers. When I became state librarian in 1991, this is what we looked like. But in order to reduce our staff by 20%, we had to go to a team-based organization, which means fewer managers, which means that in every team, there's what we call a team coordinator, which is a classified staff person selected by the team to help lead the team, and they get paid a 5% differential. And that's worked very well for us. So we've been able to streamline. When I became state librarian in 1991, we had 11 managers. Today we have 6. What this organization chart doesn't show is our heavy use of volunteers. When the governor came over to our centennial celebration a few weeks ago, he talked about the army of volunteers at the state library, and we do have an army of volunteers. We have a huge number of people that come in every day to help us do our work. We have one volunteer for every 7 paid staff, and as you see from the slide, they're equivalent to about 6.3 FTE, and in the last fiscal year, they saved us nearly $200,000 if we had had to hire staff to do that work. So moving on, Mr. Chair, to the first of our four program areas, I'm going to give you an overview of each program area. This is Library Administrative Services. You can see the staffing in this unit. You can see the fund sources in the governor's recommended budget. The funding in this unit is from every source of funds. We take our staff and we look at the proportion of these different fund sources that fund the staff, and then we use those same proportions to fund administration. And that, we think, is a sensible way to do that in the governor's recommended budget. You can see that this is just an administrative unit. It provides leadership, manages the finances and personnel, and leads in our use of performance measures.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Representative. Question for Mrs. Brown. The sheet you gave us, again, doesn't seem to match what we're being given as far as the FTEs. We have 6% on the handout you gave us, and it looks like we've got 8 or 9 FTEs, which... presentation material. If you look at the little circle.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative, the document that you have before us is the LFO analysis of the governor's recommended budget. And let's see, it should tie out to 6 positions and 5.63 FTE for library administration. The second chart at the bottom of this page.
Yes, ma'am.
Does tie to the 6 positions that they have in library admin services.
His slide is showing us 9 and almost 10.
Oh, I think this, Representative Wisnant, are you referring to? Those are the classifications.
So it's one position each. So the fiscal analyst 3, the classification levels.
Thank you.
Okay.
So the performance measures for this unit, training, hours per FTE staff member, we're going to hit that target for the biennium, as you can see here. We actually have created new training plans for every staff member, and that resulted in an increase in fiscal year 04 that you see in the slide. Another performance measure having to do with affirmative action, as you can see, long-term, we've made progress in this area. We're still about 1 position off our parity goal for the biennium. That 04 number is 5.1 staff below the parity goal for women, disabled persons, and persons of color. But we work very hard on this, Mr. Chair. Every vacancy we have, we try to recruit a diverse pool of applicants, and we make every effort to reach our affirmative action goal. Number of hours worked by state library volunteers. As you can see from the slide, this has actually declined somewhat in recent years. One of the things that happened is that Marion County used to have a community service worker program that we took advantage of, but that has been eliminated with the budget reductions at Marion County. So that's caused a drop-off in our volunteers. But in response to that, we've improved the productivity of our paid staff. We have a new automated system that we pay for with donation funds, and that has improved our productivity. So we feel right now we actually have a good level of volunteer effort, even though, as you can see, it's down somewhat, and we probably won't meet the target for volunteers in the biennium. Moving on to the second of our major program areas, this is library development services. You can see the staffing in this part of the library. Again, this is our original mission, to develop and improve library services in communities across the state. You can see the funding sources here. The general funds is the Ready to Read grant program. That is entirely the Ready to Read grant program. Other funds are the money that we collect from local libraries to pay their share of the databases that we license. And I'll tell you more about that program in a minute. But most of that money is money that we actually collect from local libraries. There's also a $185,000 grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that we've just been awarded in those other funds. Federal funds is the Library Services and Technology Act money that comes to us every year. from the federal government. It's the major source of funding for library development. And as you can see, we provide leadership and assistance to 1,600 local libraries. We administer the Ready to Read grant program, and we administer federal grants use federal money to provide a variety of services that are improving libraries in the state. The Ready to Read grant program, as you can see from the slide, this is an annual grant. All public libraries qualify for this grant. There's a formula that that's in statute that distributes the funds to local libraries. We made 117 grants this year. You can see some of the projects that were funded across the state. And these are all helping children become proficient readers. There's early childhood programs. There's programs that go out to Head Start centers. There's summer reading programs to keep kids' reading skills up in the summertime. And there's lots of research, Mr. Chair, that shows that public libraries can make a tremendous contribution to having kids become proficient readers. From, you know, bringing an infant to a toddler time program in a public library, having the library go out to Head Start centers, family child care centers, and then these summer reading programs. There's lots of research that shows that if kids don't continue reading in the summer, they can lose a lot of their proficiency that they gain in school. So we think that this is very important to our education system.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you, and I agree. This is one of the programs that you provide that I just remain excited about. I think it's really wonderful, and it would just be my desire that the grant program reach every eligible child out there. And I know that we're not able to make that kind of penetration at this time, but the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation fund, does that support Ready to Read, or is it supporting something else?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, the focus of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been to put computers in libraries that can access the Internet. And their latest grant to us continues with that project. So it doesn't relate directly to this, though many of the computers are placed in the children's department of the library.
Can you speak to the percentage of children who are reached by Ready to Read versus the eligibles that we're not serving? What does that look like?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I think there's much more that could be done to reach out to children. One of the things that libraries try to do is to take programs out to child care facilities. And in most communities, if the libraries can even get to half of the child care facilities that they know are out there, that's a lot. And there's many libraries that don't have the resources to do that at all. So that you know, there's a lot of kids that aren't being served because their parents won't bring them to the library. So that's the thing that we're most concerned about. And if we had more Ready to Read grant money, I think we'd see more of those child care facilities served by libraries.
No doubt. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One clarification. In working with local libraries, what contact do you have actually with school libraries?
We do work with school libraries, Mr. Chair, and we work with the Oregon Educational Media Association, which is the Association of School Librarians, and we've tried to help the situation with school libraries in the state. Frankly, it's a very bad situation right now. We have about half the librarians in our public schools that we had 20 years ago, and it's just going from bad to worse. So we're trying to we're trying to help them, but it's very, very difficult. You'll see in a minute that we are doing some targeted programs that serve school libraries.
I wanted to bring out that issue because in terms of our other responsibilities, in terms of public education, I think what some of us have seen is the drastic drop in the number of school librarians, occasionally some of those positions being filled with media specialists, and then when the media specialists are laid off, I have a couple of elementary schools now that basically have part-time teacher's assistants that are now the school librarians. Obviously I have some elementary schools without even that. So it's been a pretty rapid decline.
Mr. Chair, we did a study last year where we tried to see the extent to which our public schools met the quality education model requirements for school libraries, because there are specific requirements in the quality education model for staffing and purchase of library materials. And when we got data from the Oregon Department of Education and we analyzed that, we found that only two school libraries in the entire state met those standards, a middle school in Silverton, or an elementary school in Silverton, and a middle school in Ontario. But you're right, and we also found that I believe only 47% of our elementary schools have a school librarian at this time. It's more common to find school librarians at the high school level. When they have to make a choice, they tend to keep them in the high schools and lay them off in the elementary schools. I'm not sure that's the right way to do it. I almost think that to have a librarian in the elementary school is the most important to get these kids reading and get excited about books. But you're right, it's a very difficult situation. One of the misconceptions is that libraries are part of administration, and they're not. School librarians are teachers first and librarians second. And the school library is as much a classroom as any other classroom in the school, and the librarian is as much a teacher as any other teacher. So I always hate it when I read that that the cut administration, you know, we're laying off school librarians. That doesn't make sense.
Could you provide the committee with a copy of that report?
I can, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, would you say again where the two schools or two districts? Two schools that meet the quality education model.
Two school libraries.
Which schools are
they? One in Silverton. It was an elementary school in Silverton and a middle school in Ontario. And the standards aren't high. You know, to meet the elementary standard, you only need a half-time librarian. So it's not as if there's some, you know, standard that's hard to meet.
Well, that's just sad, to say the least, about it. Really sad. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. So I wanted you to see the funding for the Ready to Read grant program. This funding has been reduced several times in recent years. We hit a peak in the 2001-03 biennium. We were at about $1 per child per year in funding for the Ready to Read grant program. This is children birth to 14. And as you can see, we're down to 84 cents per child per year funding in this biennium, and the governor's recommended budget continues at that funding level. Our performance measure for the Ready to Read grant program is the percentage increase in local public library service to children. And as you can see from this chart, we've consistently in the last several years been able to continue to increase service to children. This slide actually shows a better look, I think, at the situation. This is a long-term view of that same data, and you can see that the program started in 1993, and since that time we basically doubled the number of books and other materials checked out to children in our public libraries. We've tripled the attendance at library programs, and so we think this has been tremendously successful in terms of performance. This is another slide I wanted you to see. We just did the Oregon population survey last fall, and it turns out that the age group with the highest use of our public libraries are children 5 to 14 years old. And the Oregon population survey showed that 60% of them had used a public library in the last month before the survey, higher than any other age group. So we think the Ready to Read grant program has contributed to this as well. Moving on to our federal grant program, our Library Services and Technology Act grants, we make competitive grants every year. This year we made nearly $900,000 of grants. What you see in the slide are 9 projects that were funded this year, 9 out of 13. And you can see they're doing a variety of things to improve service in various ways. Some are technology oriented. Some do deal with improving service to children. Some are looking at how to create a long-range plan to improve library services. So this is a competitive grant program. We have an advisory committee that helps us make these grants every year. One of the performance measures for this program is the percentage increase in interlibrary lending, and we're consistently increasing, or we've been able to increase it consistently since 1999. I also wanted to point out that in the latest national data, our Oregon public libraries rank number 3 in the nation in interlibrary lending. So we've really been able to push this idea of sharing library materials across jurisdictions. That saves money and gives better service to Oregonians. A project I wanted to show you that we use our LSTA federal money on came about because of Senate Bill 12, which you passed in the last session. And the purpose of this bill, Senate Bill 12, was to create a statewide database licensing program. And what this is there's electronic information resources that libraries utilize, and it's possible to go out and license these for the entire state, for public libraries, academic libraries, and school libraries, have one license. And that saves a lot of money, because if every library has to license that on their own, it just costs a whole lot more. So we went out, we licensed the EBSCOhost database. This is actually a collection of 26 databases. It has 7,000 periodicals in full text, so you can get all the articles in 7,000 periodicals, full text, from your computer. You can do that in the library. You can do it at home. And we've also licensed a newspaper database that has the Oregonian newspaper. What you see here with the EBSCOhost is actually the Spanish version at the Salem Public Library. I got it off their website, and it is available with a full Spanish interface for people to use. We licensed this for about $750,000 a year, and then we provide a 50% subsidy for public and academic libraries with federal money, and they pay the other 50%, and that's the other funds that I was showing you earlier in our budget. We collect half the money from them, we put in half the money, and that's how we pay the bill. We pay for two-thirds of the bill for school libraries, and the Oregon Department of Education pays for a third of that cost. And we asked the vendor when we licensed this, what would this have cost if you had sold this to every single school, every single public library, every single academic library? They said it would have cost $10.7 million. So we paid $750,000. So in theory, we saved $10 million to Oregon taxpayers by having a statewide license instead of letting every library just do their own thing. So we're pretty proud of that, Mr. Chair. And Senate Bill 12 has just been a great success. Some other things we do with the federal... I'm sorry.
Yes, Senator Whitsitt had a question.
Chair Devlin, sir, do you track how many how many hits this the system has on a weekly or monthly or annual basis?
Yes, Senator Whitsitt, Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt. The latest data is about 7,600 sessions a day on average. 7,600 sessions a day, 7 days a week. So that it's heavily used. This, what you see on this slide are two other things that we're funding with our federal library services and technology dollars. We have created working with the school librarians, we've created the Oregon School Library Information System, which is a web-based virtual library for our K-12 students that they can access in the library, they can access it at home. It includes these databases that we license, so students can get authoritative information. It has other tutorial information, how to write a research paper, how to do citations, lots of things on this that help students do better research. And again, it's a partnership between the State Library and the Oregon Department of Education. They pay a third of the cost of the EBSCO databases. And then LNET is a new project that's kind of an experiment. And here we're trying to share the research expertise of all our libraries. We have about 20 libraries, public and academic, that have agreed to answer questions over the Internet using chat technology. As you can see on the slide, it says chat live with a librarian 24/7. And you can literally go to this and connect to a live librarian and ask a question. They normally search the Internet to find the answer, and they push the results to you at your computer. So this is being used on the Oregon School Library Information System, and we're finding that the people that use this the most are young people. They're the ones that like to chat. I don't really want to do that myself. I'm too old to do that. Young people love to do that. So this is new. It's still experimental, and we'll see if it's a go. We're putting a lot of money into it right now, but the board wants to evaluate it and make sure that it's going to be a viable project. So I need to tell you about our performance measure. Again, we're still in library development, having to do with the Oregon benchmark, because we do have an Oregon benchmark for libraries. And our performance measure is the number of libraries making improvements to achieve the Oregon benchmark, which I'll show you in a minute on the next slide. But we have seen libraries do this in recent years. This is what the Oregon benchmark number 38 looks like. Our goal here is to have 99% of Oregonians served by a public library meeting our minimum standards. And as you can see from the slide, in 2004, the latest year, we had 9% of Oregonians that are not served by a public library. And we had 8% of Oregonians served by a public library with inadequate hours, staffing, or children's programs. And we fell behind a little bit in 2004. So to be honest with you, we're struggling with this benchmark right now. It has a lot to do just with the local budget situations for cities and counties and library districts. Public libraries are really challenged with their funding right now.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see that since 2000, we've lost some ground on that. Is that because of closures or something in districts or areas that couldn't afford rent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, it's because we've had some of our major libraries take very serious budget cuts, and they fall below the minimum standard. In the past year, the Josephine County Library, which is one of our major libraries, actually fell below these minimum standards because of budget cuts. We're working very hard to address the fact that 9% of Oregonians are not served by a public library. And in fact, our chair, Bill Sullivan, is president of a group called the Lane Library League that's working on this problem in Lane County, because 85,000 people in Lane County don't have a public library, and most of them live right outside of Eugene. They're not all in the rural areas, you might imagine.
Senator Whitsitt had a question also.
Chair Devlin, Mr. Chepke, your benchmark is for serving the public with two libraries. Does that just, when you're on, does this particular plate include those that are reached electronically? You're putting a lot of your resources into reaching these students and teachers electronically. Does this reflect that?
Senator Devlin, Senator Whitsitt, no, it does not, because the electronic resources that we license are only available to people that are served by a local library. And there's a password that you have to type in to verify that. So if you don't have a library, you don't get to use any of those resources. And that has to do with our licensing agreement with the vendor. They tend to insist that you not just open it up to anybody without a password. So that's the situation there.
Thank you. Please go.
We have a performance measure dealing with school libraries that is new, and it's the number of schools making improvements to achieve the quality education model standards for school libraries. And we haven't been able to collect data on this until last year. We got the baseline data, so we know what the baseline is now. In the next few months, we'll get the next year's worth of data from the Department of Ed, and we'll be able to see if any more schools were able to reach that standard. Mr. Chair, moving on to our second of our three program areas, Talking Book and Braille Services. Here you see the staffing for that unit at the library. You see the budget and the funding sources. The funding for Talking Book and Braille Services comes from the general fund primarily, but we also, as you see, get significant other funds, and these are all donations mostly from our Talking Book and Braille Services customers that we serve. And so we supply reading materials to over 7,000 Oregonians who are blind or have other disabilities that prevent them from reading conventional printed materials. And the Library of Congress, as has been mentioned, makes a major contribution to this with the books and the players, and the U.S. Postal Service provides free mailing. So it's very much a state-federal partnership program.
The way Representative March,
but that's not showing up as a federal contribution.
It's an in-kind, so it doesn't show up as dollars in the budget, Representative March.
Thank you.
Here you see the way it works is we mail recorded books on cassette and Braille books out to people in their homes. And so it's a very convenient service. Most of our patrons are elderly, blind people who have lost their vision very late in life. They're in their 70s and 80s and 90s. Many of them have mobility problems. So it's very important that we're able to mail the books directly to their homes, and they can mail them back postage free of postage. And as you can see here, we mail out an average of 1,454 books a day. It's a very heavily used service. We do maintain 24-hour turnaround time on our request, so we try to give excellent customer service. And here you can see the Library of Congress and the U.S. Postal Service contribution. They contribute all our collection of 160,000 talking books, valued at $2.8 million. They contribute all the players, valued at $2.6 million. And these are special players, Mr. Chair. These are four-track cassette players. They're not normal cassette players. There has to be a special format for the cassette books in order to avoid having to pay royalties. So the federal government has worked that out to not have to pay royalties because they formatted the cassettes to only play on these special machines.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Walker.
And do the individual folks buy those machines, or do you buy them for them?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, they're free of charge provided to... So when we sign somebody up, they get a machine, and we start sending them books, and it's all free. There's no charge whatsoever for any of this.
And then when they don't use it anymore, or they've passed away or whatever, is that machine returned to the state?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So there's some kind of a license agreement?
Yes, we do an inventory every year, and the federal government is very... Since they own the machines there, okay, they hold us to a pretty high standard in keeping track of all those machines.
Probably goes without saying, but they maintain the machines also, right?
No, Mr. Chair, we do that.
Oh, you maintain them.
But we actually have volunteers. There's a great group called the Telephone Pioneers that are retired telephone employees that come into the library once a week and fix machines, and they're great. They're wonderful. We have a special room that we've outfitted for the Telephone Pioneers, and so we get a great volunteer effort from them.
Senator Whitson.
Chair Devlin, Mr. Shepard, it sounds like a wonderful program. It really does. But I'm wondering if the Library of Congress supplies the collection and the talking books, and the U.S. Postal Service provides the postage, and the volunteers, the telephone pioneers, provide the maintenance, then why does it cost $200 per patron that you serve?
To serve the patrons? Senator, I actually have the cost in a slide that's coming up. I believe it's $2 a circulation.
No, actually, you said you serve 8,000 Oregonians, and you spend about $1.6 million. So, I mean, that computes to about $200 per person. I'm sure it's well spent. I was just wondering how it's spent.
I actually have a slide that's coming up, and I can show you that, Senator. Performance measures for this program, as you can see, we've increased the number of individuals registered to receive the service in the last year. So far this biennium, we've added about 1,000 new patrons. And, of course, we're losing patrons, too, because these are elderly people for the most part. So we're always adding new patrons and losing older patrons. But for a few years, we were seeing our registration start to dip, and we were very concerned about that. But we made a real marketing effort in the last 2 years, and we've actually netted an addition of about 1,000 customers so far this biennium, so we're very pleased about that. I think we'll hit this target. And our circulation, it's kind of the same story. It was dipping slightly, but it's going back up this biennium, so we're pleased about that, and I think we'll hit this target as well. We do a customer survey. We haven't been able to do that annually just because of the work involved, but every time we've done it, we've found consistently that our customers rate us very high for customer service, up in the 80% for a very good or excellent service. So they're very pleased with the service that we provide. Here's a performance measure about donations. Last year, we took in about $167,000. And again, this is mostly from the users of this service. We do two annual solicitations of our users, which we think is pretty unique for a state agency to solicit donations from their customers. But we do it because we know that they, from experience, that they want to support our program. And so this is going very well. We have an endowment fund for talking book and braille services and an enhancement fund that's using the donations to improve the service. This I think this slide addresses Senator Witsit's question. And what we do is we compare this program to other programs in other states, because every state has a program that's very similar to this. And when we do, we find that our program ranks very high in use and in cost. And as you can see, our circulation per borrower is the highest of these comparison states. Our circulation per staff member is the highest, so we have the most productive program of all these states. And our cost is the lowest of any of these states. There were two states that didn't report their expenditures for some reason to the Library of Congress, so we don't know about them. But of the ones that did report, Senator Witsit, we have the lowest cost per circulation. It costs $2 a circulation, which I think compares very favorably with these other states.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Just in looking at these, I personally would like to commend the director and the state library. This is a pretty remarkable performance, I think, that they have given us here on the talking books and Braille service. I had personal familiarity with this in a couple of cases with aging parents and relatives. For what we're getting here, this is an incredible service, and I would personally like to commend you for your work with it. Encourage you, of course, to get better, but still commend you for what you've done here. I think we, at least I for one, genuinely appreciate this.
Thank you, Representative.
Senator Walker has
a
question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, when you're computing your cost per circulation, are you including the solicitations and the donations that you're getting in determining your cost?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, this is our entire budget, not including the in-kind contribution divided by the number of circulations that we do in a year.
It includes your foundation money.
It includes, we actually have a half-time fund development professional on our staff that does the fundraising, and that would be included in this cost figure.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could follow up, do you know if other states do similar fundraising like we do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, some states do. I think our program may be one of the most well-established and is a model for other states. And I think for our size, we probably take in more money than most other states that I've heard about.
And again, Mr. Chair, the only parts of your program that you fundraise for are the talking book and Braille services.
That is true.
Okay. Well, I was amazed that you send out 1,454 books a day. That's incredible.
Yes. And I'd invite any of you that would like to see the operation. We're just across the street here. I'd love to show you Talking Book and Braille Services if you ever had a half an hour. I'd love to you to see that operation. It's very impressive to see the volume of business and the volunteer effort, which you can see every day. You look around, you see a lot of people. Most of them you'll see are going to be volunteers, a lot of them, and not necessarily paid staff people.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Jensen.
Partially a response to the Senator's question. Having some experience with the Talking Book program in Iowa, I'd say there is considerable similarity. I do note with some thing that the Iowa FTE, circulation per FTE, is significantly below what the Oregon circulation per FTE is. About a fourth, not quite that bad. But I'm wondering when we're using this calculation per FTE, are we including in here the volunteer FTE? Since I think much of their program is volunteer, and I may be, I don't want to, you know, go too far with that because it could be out on a limb with a saw in my hand, but it's a pretty well developed program, I think, too. And yeah, I think most of the states, or many of the states, do similar things, though I think your record is certainly one that they would look to as a model. Thank you.
Senator Devlin, Representative Jensen, if I could just comment. I happen to recall that the reason Iowa is so low on that productivity measure is that they have quite a large staff. They have quite a large paid staff, and they don't do as much business as we do. Mm-hmm. So that makes that a low number. And this doesn't include the volunteers, because that's part of our secret to high productivity is the use of volunteers. And I think every one of these programs makes some use of volunteers, but we've really maximized that. We do have a volunteer coordinator, a staff person that is really necessary to have a good volunteer program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. That was kind of what I was trying to say, but I think maybe what I said sounded the opposite of that.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Representative March was first, then Senator Walker.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I look at it. I was taking the senator's point down there and saying about $200 per patron over two years, and then dividing it out by a week, so it's about $2 a week. And that looks at your circulation is about 53, so they're getting about one book a week, and it's costing about $2 to handle all that. And that's pretty reasonable.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shapia, you keep going on about your volunteers, which is wonderful. So I would like you to share, what is the average profile of a volunteer? Are they older people, younger people, people who use the services? I mean, just give us some hint about these wonderful mm-hmm. people that utilize to help you perform your services.
Senator Devlin, Senator Walker, we have volunteers of all ages, all backgrounds. There's many older people. But increasingly, we have students. We have students that are doing their community service work, which is increasingly required in our schools. So we get students from Parish Middle School. We get students from the School for the Blind. We have AARP volunteers. We have the Telephone Pioneers. We still have some community service workers who were assigned to work at the library, because Polk County still has a program, but that's really gone down. So it's really a broad spectrum of people, and our volunteer coordinator is really excellent at her work, and she's always looking for new opportunities. And she'll take anybody that interviews and can be placed and can be a successful volunteer for us.
Mr. Chair, yes. Do you have some retired librarians who want to continue their good work?
No, but we do have retired people that just, you know, come in a few days a week, and it's, you know, they enjoy it because you really get a lot of satisfaction from this program. Mm-hmm. You know that you're doing a tremendous service to people, and so it's a great place to volunteer.
Sounds like it. Thank you.
Please proceed. Did you have a question? No. Please
Thank
proceed.
You. Mr. Chair, we're moving now into the last of our program areas, and this is the government research and electronic services, the information service to the state agencies that we provide. You can see the staffing for this unit the funding, and the funding for this program unit comes from an assessment on state agencies, and it's been that way since 1993, after Measure 5 passed and Governor Roberts and her administration was looking for ways to deal with that. Even back then, there was a great effort to look at not having agencies be as dependent on general fund, and so the recommendation was to take this program, which had been a general fund program primarily, and create an assessment on the agencies. So we've been doing that ever since, and we think it's been very successful. The assessment is based two-thirds on the agency FTE and one-third on the use that the agencies make of the state library, and we track that in a variety of different ways so that we can apportion that third of the assessment based on use of the library.
I might comment at that point that this is actually just a clarification, but I wanted to put the committee on notice that I have introduced a bill basically to clarify the language of our current practice in the assessments, because although we have been, I think, for three or four bienniums using our current practice, it doesn't go back as far as the assessment, there is some ambiguity in the statute, so we submitted a bill to try to clarify that ambiguity so that our past and future methodologies for that assessment is what it should be, because I guess there is just some ambiguity in the language in the existing statute.
That's true, Mr. Chair, and we really appreciate your help with that. So what this unit does, it provides accurate, up-to-date information to the agencies. It gives the agencies easy access to the best and most relevant information on the Internet via what you'll see in a minute, our State Government Information Center, which is a web-based information service. We run the search engine on Oregon.gov, which we think is a very important role, and I'll show that to you in a minute. We also provide electronic mailing lists for all the agencies. We provide about 400 different lists that have, I think, about 125,000 subscribers, all the way from, some small agency that just wants a mailing list for a small group of constituents, to our biggest list is for the Public Employee Benefit Board, and includes all state employees. So they can send out email messages to all state employees, and when you think of the money that saves from having to mail that information, it's really a tremendous service. And then we also disseminate government publications to selected depository libraries around the state to improve citizen access to government information. So when you go to the University of Oregon Library or the Portland State Library or Multnomah County Library, they have all the state publications because we send those out to them. And we've sent out this biennium about 19,000 publications to date to those libraries. Performance measure is number of research assistance transactions. And a research assistant transaction is any time we provide information to a customer. That's answering a question, giving them an article, giving them a book, finding a book in another library. That's a research assistant transaction. And as you can see, we've met the target. We're exceeding the target in this area. We're finding that our state employees need more and more information, and more they're turning to us to get that information. This is our State Employee Information Center. The research transactions are kind of, if you think of a bank, banks still have tellers, and they still have ATM, and then they have ATMs. The research assistance is the teller part of the state library, but this is the ATM. This is the self-service, web-based information center where we're finding that increasingly state employees want to do their own research. They just want us to provide them with the resources to do it. So that's what this is, the State Employee Information Center. It's on the GovNet intranet system, which you may have heard of, which is available. It's going to be available to all state employees. It's still kind of getting off the ground. There's a huge amount of information. This is just the top screen, but there's a huge amount of information in the State Employee Information Center. As you can see, there's databases. There's 81 databases currently on all different subjects: health, natural resources, public policy, everything under the sun that is relevant to state government. Library catalogs, we can get books from any place for our customers. The web library is the best of the internet that we select to be authoritative. And so what we're trying to do here is create something that's really better than Google, because Google is not necessarily authoritative. You don't know what you're getting. It's free. Google only searches what we call the free web. Mm-hmm. And the highest quality information on the web sometimes is not free. You have to pay for it. And that's what this is. We license this information so we know that it's high quality, accurate, authoritative information.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Walker.
And I think that point is really valid, because in this new age, we find people, if they go to the internet and they read it on the internet, then it must be true. And it's amazing how people fall for that. So it is good to know that you've done the research and weeded out the good from the bad, and you have annotated research that shows us that the answer you're giving us here on this website mm-hmm. is the gospel truth, and with the research to back it up. And you're saying this is not quite available to everyone yet, because we're state employees, so can we access it?
Yes, you can. And you see the URL up there. It's real simple to remember, www.library.state.or.us, and that is available to you and to your staffs. And the GovNet is a new thing. It's what they call an intranet. And what it's going to be is it's going to be a place where all state agencies can go, and there'll be information from their agency about, you know, things that are happening in the agency. There'll be information from the Department of Administrative Services about, you know, benefits and compensation and things, again, that every state employee needs to know. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be there as well. There, you see the little tab here that says go to GovNet. There's all these tabs across the top. And so the reason we're excited about this is right now you have to go to www.librarystate.org. In the future, we think most state employees will just go to GovNet, because there'll be all kinds of other information they're trying to get, and we'll have that strong presence there, and we think our use will go up because of that.
Senator Walker. Chair, it's just a valuable service. I can't tell you how many hours I spend on the internet researching topics that I'm working on here at the legislature, and when you're out there on Google, you've got to go through pages and pages and click on things, and then you find it's not really what you're looking for. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love libraries anyway, but I really, really like this and appreciate that you've gone to that effort.
Thank you, Senator. So, the performance measure for this is the percentage of state employees registered to use the State Employee Information Center, because you have to register to use these licensed databases, again, because they cost money, and we don't want just anybody going to the website and using it. We only pay enough money for the state employees to use it. So that's this figure here. It's plateaued out a little bit, and we think that, again, when we're part of GovNet and people are really using GovNet extensively, that we'll see this number go up. Another measure is the average daily visits to the State Employee Information Center, and this has been growing pretty significantly, and we're pretty confident we're going to meet the target of 400 visits a day and probably exceed that target by the end of the biennium. The search engine for Oregon.gov is something that we do. Oregon.gov, as you know, is the state portal system for citizens to use to get information about the state of Oregon. This is mainly done by the Department of Administrative Services, but they turn to us to do the search engine because that is something that librarians do. We have the expertise to manage these systems so that people can find what they're looking for. And what it involves is going out to the agencies and showing them basically how to catalog their websites. We call it meta tagging the websites. And so if the agencies do a good job of meta tagging and we've done a good job of training them, then you can use this search engine to go straight to what you're looking for. And the example here is the Quality Education Commission. If you're looking for that, you've heard about the quality education model and you want to know what that's about, you could go to Oregon.gov, but you see the A to Z agency list under what's inside Oregon.gov. That won't take you to the Quality Education Commission. It's not there. Or if you use those pull-down menus across the top, you can't get there that way either. But if you put in quality education model in the little box, it, as you can see from the example, it takes you right to it. And it's because we've set it up to do that. It just doesn't happen by itself. And we're always looking at this, making sure it works. I use it all the time, and if I don't get straight to where I'm going, I call up my staff and say, you know, we need to fix this because there's some meta tag that doesn't work right to connect to the right information. So we think this is pretty important. And this search engine, the use is really growing, and we're going to meet that target. It doesn't look like it from this graph, but actually in the last quarter, we hit about 2,000 uses a day. And so I'm pretty confident we're going to meet that performance measure target. We do customer service surveys in this part of the library. And again, like with Talking Books, we get consistently high customer service feedback from our customers in the 80s. And actually, it doesn't show here, but we just completed the most recent survey, and the result was 87% of our customers said we did a very good or excellent job, which is down 2% from 03. But we think it's within the margin of error, and we still think that's pretty good. Mr. Chair, we've come to the last two slides of the presentation. We're done with the program areas, and I'm going to do this slide, and then I'm going to let Bill do the last slide.
Before we go into that, yep. There is one item I neglected to actually do, and that is I think many of the committee members know Monica. But Monica Brown is the analyst for this area, but she will only be with this committee probably two more times during this session. She'll be here for phase two and phase three, and she's been relatively silent during phase one, but that's been the normal process for phase one.
I'll pick up speed in phase two.
In phase two. Just I wanted to get that on the record. And in your presentation on the reduction, so that there's some understanding, better understanding, you do have some of your funds that, in terms of federal funds, that you have match requirements. Could you cover that also in your presentation? So,
yes, Mr. Chair. So here's a summary of the board's 10% reduction option plan, which is in the governor's recommended budget. In the general fund, beginning with that, to reduce our general fund budget by 10%, you can see what the amount of the reduction would need to be. And the board's plan would have us reduce the ready-to-read grant program by 25% to get to that amount. And the impact of that would be that the grants would be smaller to the libraries. Again, it's the grants go out to all the libraries, so we wouldn't have libraries that don't get a grant, but all the grant amounts would be reduced by 25%. And the result would be less service to children from those local libraries, less trips out to the child care centers, less improvement of the summer reading programs and all the things that the libraries are doing with those funds. There is a matching or maintenance of support requirement with our Federal Library Services and Technology Act that Senator Devlin alluded to. And so we estimate that that this reduction in our ready-to-read grant program would trigger a reduction of about $135,000 in our federal funds because we would not be maintaining effort in that area. In federal funds, a 10% reduction in federal funds would, you see the amount that that would amount to, and that is the Library Services and Technology Act grant program. The board's plan for that would be to reduce our competitive grant program by 25%. So we would keep those programs that we're funding, like the database licensing program in the Oregon School Library Information System, those would not be reduced. But the competitive grant program, which as you saw earlier was about a $900,000 program this year, would be reduced by 25%. So there'd be fewer grants basically going out to local libraries. Our other fund reduction plan.
Representative Jensen had a question.
Is your $135,000 in the general fund, federal fund reduction, reflected in the $463,000, or is that actually $600,000 in the reduction in federal funds?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, no, it's not included. If we were to reduce 10% in both funds, then it would be in addition to the $463,000.
You're indicating a loss, a reduction of $135,000, if the 25% reduction takes place under the general fund carry. And I want to know if that $463,000 includes that $135,000.
And the answer, Representative Jensen, is no, it does not.
So the total federal is $600,000 so far?
Yes. And I should comment, Mr. Chair, I neglected to do this, that in the general fund, we basically have two general fund programs, the ready-to-read grant program and the Talking Book and Braille Services program. So when the board looked at this, it really came down to weighing those two programs, and the decision that the board made was to reduce Ready to Read and not to reduce Talking Book and Braille Services. And the rationale for that is that
I can tell that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh. The painful as it was to look at any cuts to Ready to Read, the Talking Book and Braille program is so lean, and you saw that compared to other states, that we thought any cuts there and it would collapse and there would be no Talking Books and Braille program. We didn't feel it was possible to make a 10% reduction cut there. It is possible in Ready to Read, but that is extremely painful too, because you're hurting the kids and the local libraries that need it most. So that was our thinking, and it wasn't fun.
Chair.
Yes.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you explain the difference? I guess Ready to Read is for at-risk kids and done through strictly the library, and SMART is done through the schools.
Representative. The Ready to Read is done through the public libraries, and it actually, an emphasis of Ready to Read is preschool children. And in fact, we find that most of the libraries do have a component of their program that targets preschool children. SMART is a school-based program. So I think the two complement each other very well.
Representative Wisman.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of our, I'm on the Commission for Children and Families in Deschutes County, and part of our big expense with SMART is doing background investigations on our adult readers. Is that a big expense for the ready-to-read program, too, that you have to get background?
No, Representative, because we are primarily using library staff and not volunteers, and so they've already been checked out to be employed by the library. I think the issue with the SMART program, as I understand it, is because they're using anybody that happens to volunteer for SMART, they really need to investigate to see what the background of these people are. But we don't have that problem.
Could I add one thing?
Sure.
Okay, Mr. Chair. The other reasoning that we decided not to cut TVABs, the Talking Books and Braille system, was if it were to collapse and we didn't provide that service, then all the local libraries would have to provide it. Because of the Federal Disabilities Act, they have to be able to serve the blind population that can't come into the library. It would not be a cost savings for the state of Oregon if we didn't provide TVABs. All of the local libraries would have to do it, and it would be much more expensive that way. So that's why we didn't want it to collapse.
Okay. Moving on to the other fund reduction. You can see the amount that comprises 10% of this governor's recommended budget, other funds. This would be the assessment for government research and electronic services. We would have to reduce that program by 15% in order to meet this target, and it would reduce the amount of resources that we'd be able to license for the State Government Information Center. There'd be a reduction in staff of 3 FTE, and so we would be able to deliver less service, less information to the agencies, and so it would just be a decrease in that service to the agencies under this scenario.
One question going back to the federal funds. In terms of those the grant program, particularly the competitive grant program, if we were to somehow decline those federal dollars, and Congress is going to probably appropriate a certain amount for that, would we basically be giving dollars to other states is what we would be doing?
Mr. Chair, I think that it may result in that, or it may just not, it may just go back in the federal treasury if we were to decline those dollars.
Yeah. Senator Nelson.
Thank you. On the other funds, I say that's about half of your budget. And you basically you generate that from assessment on all state agencies except the Department of Education. How do you determine how much you assess them, or is this a flat rate? Or
Senator, it's the Department of Higher Education, the Oregon University System, that we don't assess because they have their own libraries in the state universities. That's the rationale for that. But every biennium, well in advance, you know, we started actually probably in December of 2003, planning for our assessment for the 0507 budget. And so we assess, you know, what services we intend to deliver, what the resources we need to do that are, and that's when we determine the amount of our assessment. And we work with very closely with the Department of Administrative Services. They have to approve that assessment. And I need to tell you that our assessment in the governor's recommended budget for 0507 is a slight decrease from the assessment in this biennium. So we were able to really try to save money and you know, lessen our expenditures. And so we were actually able to put together an assessment for 0507 that is not an increase for the agencies, and we worked very hard to do that. But every 2 years we go through that process of determining what our assessment needs to be.
Senator Gordley, then Representative Wisman, then Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to go back to the ready-to-read grants for a moment. And could you verify for us what would happen to the $135,000-plus reduction if it were not accepted by the state? Does it go to some other state or states or wind up in some other... I ask the question because, federal funds are... It's just another way of saying taxpayer dollars. They are our taxpayer dollars coming back to us to invest in ways that we choose. And frankly, I would like us not to lose that investment for that purpose, for the purpose of the ready-to-read grant. But again, we'd just like to know... Mm-hmm. What happens when we make that kind of reduction? Mm-hmm. And I'll have the same question, Mr. Chair, every time we're looking at a reduction that results in the loss of federal funds, meaning our taxpayer dollars possibly going someplace else, mm-hmm. other than where they belong, here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I do believe that under the federal law, the money would be redistributed to other states. This is a national mm-hmm. program. The Congress allocates the money for this program, and then there's an allocation formula based on population, and so it goes to all 50 states and some territories. Mm-hmm. So this money would be redistributed using that process, is my understanding.
And, Mr. Chair, just to continue, looking at the broader budget picture, inclusive of education but other budget areas as well, $135,000 seems like a small amount, but when you add up all the other possible federal fund reductions that we're looking at across these budgets, again, that's the loss of... Oregon taxpayer dollars reinvestment in state services, and I would just ask us to think about it in that way.
Representative Wisnett, then Senator Whitsitt, then Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, you said you do not charge higher universities or higher education. Does that include community colleges, or are they community colleges charged?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, that would include, we don't charge community colleges because they're units of local government. They're not a state government. Now, we would have a relatively small assessment on the Office of Community College Services based on their FTE and their use, but I think it's a fairly modest amount. Yeah. But because they are a state agency.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Now, we were briefed yesterday how is the... was it Klamath Falls is going to share the library with the university, or was it Medford or one of them? So that sort of causes a conflict there. we do charge them. It sounds like we charge them a little bit, but not much. But then you're going to have a combined library, so one apart combined with community college and higher ed.
Well, I think what we're basically charging the assessment on is just the few state employees that are in the office for the community colleges and workforce development. And so,
mm-hmm.
True.
Yeah. Let's see if I get this right. Is that all, Representative Wisnett?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Senator Whitsitt.
Colonel Wisnett just asked my question.
Okay. So, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually,
then Senator Walker.
Way back in your presentation, having to do with the organization. And from a hierarchical organization to a team-based and the number of managers, and I can't make the numbers add up. as I look at the typical organizational chart, I do come up with what I would probably perceive as 11. As I look at the other chart, I think I see where you get 6 team-based organizations. But it seems to me that when you get that 6, I think you get that by looking at those 4 circles or ovals in the middle and not the 2 on the wings. And I see a couple of administrative-type position on the wings there. Further, when I go back to the hierarchy, I see those administrative positions being included in the 11 that I got under the hierarchy. So we've still got them in there as administrative positions, but they're not part of what we're counting. I mean, that's the way it looks to me. Now explain why I'm seeing this incorrectly.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, in our current organization, we have 6 management service employees, and all the rest are classified represented employees. And those 6 are myself, our business manager, Keith Adams, who's here today, our personnel manager, Lee Rengert, and then each one of the 3 programs, Talking Books, Library Development, and Government Research and Electronic Services, has 1 manager. And that's how you get the 6. And everybody else you see here is not a management services employee. And then, there are some people that do administrative work, but there's only 6 management service employees. Does that answer your question?
Okay, you're making a distinction between administrative versus management. And that's a distinction that always bothers me when that is made as contrasted to line staff. Okay. I see where you're coming from. And I hope that it's not taken as a criticism of the library, state library. Merely a question that I have, and one that I will be frequently asking about in other areas, probably.
And Senator
Walker. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Shepke, you indicated when you were talking about the LMAP program that you were spending a lot of money on it now, and I can't seem to locate it in your budget. Can you tell me how much you spend on that?
We're spending this year about $240,000 of federal money on that program.
Okay, so there's none of your state money is involved in that?
No state money at all.
Okay.
One clarification, too. All that we have is a brief phase one presentation along with Ms. Brown's analysis of the budget. We will get a very detailed binder of all the expenditures by the state library for phase 2.
More books.
This was nice.
It would be helpful to further unpack the impact of the 15% reduction. The Government Research and Electronic Services, which would decrease information services to state agencies. What I would like to know is, what does that mean for state agencies? What is it that state agencies will no longer be able to get in the way of service?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I mentioned the state government information center has 81 databases. Part of this reduction
for this unit would be fewer databases. We would probably have 10 or 20 fewer databases because we wouldn't have the money to license all the ones we have. Another thing that we would plan to cut out fairly early would be the few remaining print periodicals that we subscribe to and the books that we buy, which tend to get less use nowadays than the databases. We would reduce the staff by a librarian who is primarily right now dealing with special collections, which is the older state documents and preserving those for the future. We sort of put our preservation program on hold because that's not something, you know, we necessarily have to do today. We can suspend that. Another thing we would do is we would reduce our information technology staff. We have three people in that doing that work, and this would reduce that by one. So it would mean that we couldn't continue to develop our information products. We would sort of suspend that development, just try to maintain what we have. And some of these new things that you've seen, like our mailing list service and our search engine service, these were all new things that we cooked up to provide more service to the agencies. That would all pretty much just be frozen, and we'd just be maintaining what we do today.
Representative March has a question.
Thank you. And actually, just something you said triggered that one of the things that this committee is looking at is are the costs involved in education and educational materials. Do you know, is there some sort of a source or a CPI, for example, around books and materials as opposed to just a general CPI? I mean, if there is, could we maybe get some information back on that?
Yes, Representative March, we can get you that information.
Thank you.
Can I clarify one item with the probably with the BAM analyst, maybe with Ms. Brown also? When Governor Roberts basically changed this to an assessment, she didn't actually change it, she recommended it, and the legislature changed it to an assessment. Before, it was paid with just general fund dollars. Since it becomes an assessment on state agencies, is it paid for potentially with a broad spectrum of funds, you know, rather than just general fund dollars?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Ames with Budget and Management. That is true, and is true of all assessments. Essentially, when you move to the assessment, you're saying that all agencies are getting services, so even if they're funded with licensing fees or federal funds, they should be paying their share of the cost of those services. The general rule of thumb is that the general fund portion of an assessment, if you tracked it back to each agency, is about a third.
About a third.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Nelson.
Okay, that triggers a question. I've been looking at this, and you know, Mr. Brown has indicated on page 417 of the budget environment, some of this assessment funding has now been used for services that do not directly benefit state agencies. The legislature did some of that. And the board has done some of that. Do you anticipate any feedback or kickback or pushback from the agency saying why you're using these funds? Is this going to be a real issue for us and us in developing this budget?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there hasn't been a lot of vocal feedback from the one-time shift for the administrative costs. The governor's budget does shift that back, which you can see there, to general fund. I think to fund things on an ongoing way that way, I think there's legal issues and probably you would need advice because you're paying for some of these services with funds that are dedicated for certain other things. And probably we would need to have some exploration about those issues. I think the feeling last session was, on a one-time basis, it's a crisis, we can do that and probably be fine. But
thank you.
With that,
Mr. Chair, this is the prioritization that was requested by you and the Legislative Fiscal Office, and our State Library Board worked on this over the course of two meetings, and I thought our board chair could explain this to you, how we came out with this.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Bill Sullivan again. We were, again, this was not a very pleasant task to prioritize, and we broke this down, and we were requested to break it down not just into the three big departments of the state library, but further, so it's broken down further. And we were given some criteria to use, and we added a couple. But we did follow all of the instructions we were given, and this is the result. I'm here to tell you, though, that we're not telling you to cut to number 7 just because it's at the bottom of the list. And I wanted to go up the list from the bottom and tell you why we think this is, that you should not cut them in that way. And in fact, we recommend that you don't cut them at all, which is what the governor is recommending. Number 7 is automated system support. And it doesn't show up very high because it's not very sexy, but no library today runs without it. That is the computer systems. Those are the databases. And without those, none of these other programs really function very well. I suppose you could cut it, but everything else would be hamstrung. Number 6, the next lowest one, is information services to state agencies. And yes, you could cut this, but what would happen if we eliminated that, for example, which is possible? If you eliminated it, then every state agency would have to hire their own librarians and have their own library. And the DMV and corrections, they would have to have people filing away their records and librarians who would answer their questions, and they would have to license their databases for their all their information separately. Doing this in one unified central operation saves the state of Oregon a lot of money. You could cut it, but you really wouldn't be saving money. And then the others we've talked about above that involve a lot of federal funds, and we go right up to Ready to Read, which has been cut already. It was, I think, the real idea was it $1 a child a year. And it is now down to 84 cents, and somehow it just seems a little bit chintzy. And what it's hurting is, of course, the kids and the literacy. And right when it is at a crucial stage, and the governor came over to our 100th anniversary party last month. Maybe you've seen the blue banners on the building out there for the 100th anniversary. And he said the same thing. The reason that he's not recommending that you really hack into the state library budget with an axe is that we've stripped it down to these core essential services that are saving the state money on one hand and dealing with the most fragile people too, the blind, the elderly, and the children. And this is why we had a very hard time giving this priorities and talking about reductions when we don't really believe that it would be a good idea.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Whitsitt, Senator Walker.
Chair Devlin, it's just striking to me that these folks are talking about $1 a child, and we have some $26 million a year comes per biennium comes to Oregon to teach K-3 children how to read from the federal government, and it's really unclear how that is applied to actually teaching kids to read.
Yeah. Senator Walker, then Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sullivan, I wondered who you were at the dais because I was late. I always have meetings in the morning before I come here. Are you the same Bill Sullivan who writes all those great hiking books?
Yeah. Right. I brought that up at the start, that I'm an Oregon author and a local Lane County activist.
Yes, you are. And you're a fabulous author. And
I just want to tell you,
you know, the thing about what we've learned about today is how much research the library provides. That's why I love your books. You do all the research so I don't have to go out there and hike someplace that's really a dud or that I could get lost. And I have to tell you, your books go with us in our backpacks so that we don't get lost. And my husband and I sit and map out our hiking plan and where we want to go based on the research you've done, which is what, you know, our state library can help others get that research too. And so I just want to thank you. I want to thank you for your service on the board and your activism and your writing. It's just wonderful. Yes.
Representative Jensen, then Representative Wisnett.
Probably jumping in here to steal Senator Nelson's usual violence. But my question would be, how many truckloads of logs would it take to bring this up to back up to a dollar a day?
I'll leave that to Ms. Brown to make that calculation. That's it. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought your report on the lowering the cost, increasing the user base was a very good report. Mr. Chair, I would suggest maybe that could be looked at as far as a performance measure that they might want to add also to their performance areas, because I think it was a good report. I'm really excited about checking out how after 2 weeks the book disappears. I thought it was Mission Impossible where the disc disappears. Not for today, but in the future discussions, I'm not aware of how you interact with the state archive. And has it ever been looked at as far as merging the two? Does the other states have the library and the archive merged, or is it always separate? And we might want to discuss that in the future, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
We'll put that on to phase two just to discuss that issue. Thank you very much for both of your presentations, and thank you both for being here. We will see you again, and we will see Ms. Brown again in phase two. And with that, I will close this hearing and close this meeting tomorrow morning. Remember, tomorrow morning we have OHSU. It's a fairly complex budget. We have only 2 days to get through OHSU in phase one, and it's a very large binder. So.
We're all like this, Mr. Chair. It's a great day.
With that, the
presentation.
With that, the
thanks
meeting
for your volunteer work.
Thank you. <Yeah. laughs>